of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is episode 604, hour one. Jason Lindgren is with me and Samantha Burnell joins us. We're going to be getting into dentistry. And with all things, it's being taken over, just like hospitals, just like the undertaking business was taken over. I've talked about that before on the air. But before we jump in, as we head into the holidays, we are offering gift memberships. You can go to the regular subscription area to get to a gift membership. And the way you do it is you simply use the email address of the person you're giving it to, and then you hand them the password. Also, I have added more of the solar images, and I think there are 19 or 20 now available, and I'll be making more as time goes on. But with that, welcome, Jason.
And a lovely good day.
It is indeed. Let's jump right in. This ought to be a very interesting episode. Welcome aboard, Samantha.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wonderful to have you. Why don't you quickly give us a little of your background so people can know where you're coming from? And then I want to jump right into the fluoride trial ruling.
Awesome. So just full disclosure for your listeners, this is my first time being on a podcast. So I'm going to try to do a good job for everybody, but I am very passionate about all the things we're going to talk about today. So I think it's going to be an interesting discussion one way or the other. So I'm a dental hygienist. I'm a biological dental hygienist. I've been in the profession of dentistry since I was 18. So it's been about 24 years. I started out as a dental assistant. I grew up on a farm. So I kind of have a background into that kind of a lifestyle as well. So I was kind of always interested in kind of more natural health and that kind of thing. But for most of my career, I was in the allopathic dental profession, and I actually worked to build the biggest dental group in the state that I live in, which is now one of the biggest DSOs in the area. And that is, like you said, one of the concerns that I have of dentistry lately is the takeover of private equity in the dental profession as a whole. I don't think it's going very well for the patients, and it's definitely not going well for the employees of the dental profession. And since COVID, that has just skyrocketed. The DSOs have really been able to infiltrate a lot of the practices where the dentists were getting close to retirement. They got very scared during COVID with all the new mandates and all the price increases on salaries and supplies. It made it very difficult for the older dental practitioners to stay in practice, and they ended up selling their practices for pennies on the dollar to the DSOs, who are just infiltrating the states like at a very rapid pace in the past few years.
What is a DSO and what is a DPO? And by the way, I mean, everybody who's followed us, this was one of the planned opportunities created by COVID. I talked about when my mother died versus how when my father died. And that's when I put together how they were calculating how many people had passed away. A big company with a Greek god name had taken over the undertaking. And just to cut to the chase, to refresh memories, they basically honored an insurance I did not buy from them. My parents did not buy from them. They said, sure, give me the number. We'll honor that. And I said, how can this be? I didn't buy this from you. They said, don't worry about that. We've got it. And this is what's going on. So in the dentistry world, DSOs and DPOs are doing the infiltration or the takeover. What is a DSO? What is a DPO? Samantha?
So DSO is a dental service organization, and a DPO is a dental partnership organization. They're basically the same thing. Most of the hospitals now are owned by a bunch of corporate people. So a dental office itself cannot be owned by somebody that's not a dentist. So the way they get around this is to set up a corporate structure that owns the practices, and they pay the employees through the practice and they pay the dentist through the DSO. It's a very convoluted structure to be able to get private equity involved in small dental offices. And what they'll do is then centralize their billing, put in call centers, and then take the personalization out of the dental care. They tend to buy things at lower costs, whether it be dollar store brand composite material or whatever things they can do to cut costs. And they just want volume in their chair. So they want the hygienist to do 40-minute cleanings and fluoride treatments on everybody because there's a high profit margin on fluoride and all these things. And it's really taking a lot of that personalization out of dental care, just like in the medical profession, where you don't get to see the same doctor from the time you're born till you're an adult. You get a different doctor, a different dentist every time you go into the office because there's such a high turnover rate.
Whose license are they leveraging off? So they put a corporation to get around a licensed dentist. I don't quite get that. So the corporation somehow holds the licensure?
Well, the individual practices hold the licensure, but the corporation has like a parent company over it.
Are they doing the same thing that the medical field is doing, where they just have computer systems set up, you punch in what the problem is and out spits an answer?
They're trying to do that. The dental industry is a little bit behind in technology in general compared to the medical profession. So a lot of offices just still use like central servers and stuff. So that's when the DSOs come in, they put in like cloud-based softwares for practice management. And then they are definitely trying to do that with like online booking and different things like that to take the calling and talking to somebody at the office out of the equation.
Unreal, the world that we're headed into. But before we jump into the fluoride trial ruling, let's just do a quick rundown. What is biological dentistry? And off the top of my head, I'm guessing right out of the gate, no fluoride, no mercury.
Yep, those are the two basic concepts. And that's what a lot of people start out in the realm of biological dentistry with. But true biological dentistry on the IABDM, so that's the organization I belong to, is the International Academy of Biological Dentistry and Medicine, was founded about 40 years ago by Dr. Ed Arana and Dr. Gary Varigan, who were studying energy medicine, acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, learning EAV from Dr. Vohl. And they just really knew that the basis of German biological medicine is what biological dentistry is based on, which is rooted in Reckeweg and just basically supporting the body's innate ability to heal itself and removing toxins from it so that that can happen.
You mean common sense?
Yeah, exactly. The terrain theory. We're very strong in the terrain theory.
So check this out. Years ago when I was still in San Diego, so it must have been, I think the last time I saw a dentist in San Diego must have been in the neighborhood of 2013, 2014. And I go in and I tell them I don't want fluoride. And it's a whole thing, like pushback. And are you out of your mind? And don't you know why the British people don't have good teeth? I'm not even kidding here. Literally told the reason British people don't have good teeth is because there's no fluoride in their water. And by the way, what difference does it make if we give you fluoride here? You're drinking it because San Diego water is fluoridated. So I go through this whole thing. Finally, they acquiesce. And it was like a give and take for 20 minutes just to let them know I'm not taking fluoride. Then at the end of the cleaning, what do? They try to get fluoride in me. Right? So right. That's how it went. Well, when I came to Rhode Island, the first dentist visit, I walk in ready for the battle. And I said, no mercury, no fluoride. And they said, okay, cool. And that's when I asked the question. I said, in San Diego, it was like a whole fight. Why are you guys so easy with this? And they said, a huge portion of the people walking in now make this request and we're prepared for it, which leads us into the fluoride trial ruling. Can you bring us up to speed on that?
Yeah, so that's super exciting. And I think it's definitely going to be opening the floodgates to a lot of the things that we're doing in dentistry. But basically, it was a 7-year long trial and it just closed. And I believe the ruling came out in just a couple months ago. It actually ended in March, but the judge just came out with his ruling. And he's basically saying that the court finds there's an unreasonable risk to be putting fluoride in the water because it lowers IQ in children. And that was really the big point they were trying to make with this trial, even though we know that fluoride has many other health implications. But this one was the big one. They have over 76 studies that the EPA themselves were behind that show this evidence, which is just outstanding.
What level of court are we talking? Is this a federal court? Do you know what level of
court? Yep, it was a federal court. Yep, it was a federal court.
So this is presumably going across every state.
Yep. So they basically have told that the EPA needs to make adjustments to their current regulation with water fluoridation. So it's not like they can mandate it overnight. It's kind of the states now have to, each state has to kind of take it into their own hands because, you know, the EPA is going to drag their feet on it. So nothing has really changed yet.
Well, I mean, they've created a situation that's untenable because if I comprehend this correctly, when I was in San Diego, I remember the argument. It came a week. I think it was about a week before they threw it in the water, the San Diego water supply. It came on the news and it was the most one-sided thing you ever saw. They claimed they were going to hear both sides of the story. The side for fluoride got the entire floor. The guy against it got about a minute and a half. But what I learned was, okay, we've got fluoride now, don't want it in my water. So I started looking at the filtration systems. What I was told back then is the molecule is so small, not that easy to get it out of the water. So I had a reverse osmosis system. But to cut to the chase, they have basically poured this into the wildlife, into the aquifers. I mean, how do you get it out?
Yeah, that's the problem. It's an industrial waste product. It's the byproduct of phosphor and aluminum and uranium mining. So that's kind of how it ended up being used for this reason, was that they had nowhere else to put it. So that alone is going to be a problem as to where all these chemicals are going to go now that they can't put it in the water.
What we're talking about implies that it doesn't break down readily. Is that correct? Do you know?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's in the soil now. It's in our water supply. It's got a very strong residual effect for sure.
Because of the size of the molecule, when you use like a gravity filter like I have, which is an Alexa Pure, you have to make sure you get the one that's got the arsenic filter built in with the other filter, because that's the only thing that'll capture the majority of the fluoride contamination.
Right.
And that doesn't even start to speak about all the fish, right? So anyone right. eating freshwater fish must be eating fluoride. But so what is the ADA going to do about this?
Well, the ADA is doing nothing about it. They said that the court ruling against the EPA provides no scientific basis for the ADA to change its endorsement of community water fluoridation as safe and beneficial to oral health.
Come on now. So they do a 180 on what mm-hmm. the ADA, I mean, already we see what's going on here.
And the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying the same thing, that there's nothing about the current decision that changes my confidence in the safety of optimally fluoridated water in the U.S.
It's the magical, I don't even know what to call it. It's the magical, I don't know, is it an element? What is a chemical that apparently has no dosage, right? So if you drink 10 gallons of water a day, you're fine. If you drink a pint, you're fine. I guess there's no dosage required on fluoride.
Right, exactly. And it's never actually been approved to be ingested for tooth health.
What is the actual history of water fluoridation?
So it's a pretty convoluted story, but it goes back to the Industrial Revolution, and Alcoa is behind it with the aluminum manufacturing. Again, it was a byproduct of aluminum manufacturing, and it was getting into the water supply of the local towns, and all the cows were dying. They were getting bone cancers. Their teeth were falling out. Andrew Mellon, who was on the board of Alcoa, he hired the Mellon Institute to do a study on it to prove that it was something to do for teeth. And that's basically how it became to be.
Oh, and let's not forget that Edward Bernays was hired to be part of all of this.
Edward Bernays, and then the Manhattan Project is in there. All the big players are behind this. It's pretty crazy when you go back and really understand it. There's some really great documentaries out there. Fluoride Gate, An American Tragedy, Poison on Tap.
Well, you want to talk about a scam. They went from having a waste they would have had to pay to get rid of
exactly.
to turning it into a product to right. sell and make them even more money. Thanks, Edward Bernays. Yet another thing you did to us.
Right.
Well, isn't it claimed that the Nazis were applying this to their prisoners or something like that?
That's what they say. Yeah, they say to make them complacent and basically subdue them.
Unbelievable. So, I mean, what are the known dental and health impacts of fluoride? And when I say known, I'm not talking about the mainstream. I'm talking about the common sense approach.
Yeah. So every day when I see patients, I see dentally what we call dental fluorosis. So basically what happens is their teeth, people's teeth turn different colors. They start with usually like it's called a snow capping effect, where the cusps of the teeth have little white spots on them and the rest of the tooth is more of a yellow color. That's a more minor fluorosis. And then more severe fluorosis is the teeth actually turn brown and they get very porous and they actually get very rough surface. So they attract more plaque and debris. But I see it, I mean, every single day. I think right now about 75% of people have dental fluorosis in their teeth that are under the age of like 50.
And so if there is a word for this, and if you can recognize it, how in the hell is it that the dentistry industry isn't looking at it, recognizing it, and rightly calling it an effect of fluoride?
Well, it's interesting because when you see it in their teeth, you know it's also doing the same thing to their bones. So it causes skeletal fluorosis in the same way. And a lot of clinicians, when they look at dental fluorosis, they actually confuse it with demineralization because it has a similar look to it. And when you see a dental patient with demineralization, the typical dental protocol is to put them on more fluoride, prescription fluoride. So they end up, a lot of these patients end up actually getting more fluoride because of a misdiagnosis and looking at their teeth clinically. So that's even more tragic. Fluoride builds up in the thyroid, the parathyroid, the pancreas. It calcifies your pineal gland. When it comes through the water lines, it actually binds to lead. So generally, people that have fluoridated water have more lead in their blood. The multiplicative effects are just crazy.
There used to be a company that sold gallons of distilled water marketed as for baby with added fluoride.
It's crazy.
Now, I don't see that anymore. I used to see it in Walmart all the time, and I certainly noticed it 20 years ago when my daughter was little. But at some point, something happened where that got taken off the shelves, at least that I've noticed.
Yeah, and I've worked in towns where they don't fluoridate the water, and what they do is they give children fluoride tablets to ingest.
They did that to me. They did that to my mother when I was a kid, and we had a family dentist back then. Minty, almost like candy, the kind of thing an unsupervised kid would have been definitely taking way too much of. But when was the ruling made and what does it mean? I mean, there's no directive and they've let the ADA off the hook entirely. Is it just a statement from the court or is it more than that?
As far as I know, it's just a statement from the court at this point.
I'm actually going to have to look this up, but you got anything else on fluoride, Jason, that you want to ask?
Well, what's the intention here from the governmental bodies due to this ruling?
Well, I mean, their intent is for it to be removed. The problem is that the EPA, nobody has really kind of taken credit for fluoride in the water. So nobody's really been regulating it.
So if somebody takes credit for the fluoride being put in the water, they might get held responsible for getting it out of the water.
Exactly. So that's where like it's kind of like a gray area. It's like, who's the one that has to now do something about it? And how does that happen?
So the way this got rolled out on mainstream CBS, I just did a quick lookup. It says a federal court in California ruled late Tuesday against the EPA, ordering officials to take action over concerns about potential health risks and levels of fluoride in American drinking water. So let me just scan down here a little bit. It was a ruling, but it does not conclude with a certainty that fluoridated water is injurious to public health. So there it is.
Right.
So, yeah, it's exactly what you said. If I had to guess, this isn't going away anytime soon. And even if it was, I mean, how could you possibly, I'm not even sure how you could consider getting it out of like the aqueducts and other things, never mind all the wildlife. And I don't know if it gets into plants, you know, does this get into plants and fish? I don't know.
Right. Well, I guess the first step is to stop the assault and then take it back from there. But I would say every person should be going to their local municipalities and bringing this ruling to their local congressman and whoever, just on a local level. A lot of towns are doing it. You see the movement. It's happening all over social media. Every day a new town is coming out having removed the fluoride.
It would be interesting to be able to see the sales data at grocery stores on toothpaste, just to see how many people are still buying fluoridated toothpaste versus the other options. Where I am here in Rhode Island, the first eye opener I got was the response from my dentist. Okay, no big deal. We won't give you any of that stuff. The second was when I went to the grocery stores here, there were a lot more options on the shelves at the time without fluoride. But if I had to guess, I think the top four shelves in any grocery store I'm in is fluoridated toothpaste.
Almost all of them. But going back about two decades, you probably wouldn't even be able to find fluoride-free toothpaste. You'd have to special order from somewhere. Now there's options.
I think they knuckled under. What was the one brand that was one of the early adopters of removing the...
Tom's.
I think it might have been Tom's.
Tom's.
Yeah.
But they, in fact, sell a toothpaste that is fluoridated.
Yeah, so they have multiple options for both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they got bought out by Colgate or one of those bigger companies.
Yeah, of course they did.
Yeah, that's what keeps happening. And then they add SLS and stuff like that. So it's not just the fluoride in the toothpaste that's bad. There's a lot of harsh detergents and stuff that deplete your nitric oxide and lower the pH in your mouth, which will cause you to get cavities. So there's so many bad things they put in the toothpaste and mouthwashes.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. On how we got fluoride into our dentistry isn't as bad as how we got mercury, in my view. But with the fluoride, how it was allowed to go into the water, it was unbelievable. I watched it in real time and the population was asleep at the switch. There was no outcry at all. And when they gave short shrift to the team of people trying to push against it on the news broadcast, they literally cut them off at the knees, 30 seconds. No, this isn't good. And here's why. Up, we're out of time. You know, this kind of thing.
Yeah. And the people in the dental profession we're so brainwashed. We're so brainwashed that it's very hard to get people to open their eyes to that there's other options out there. They just can't fathom that fluoride isn't like the greatest thing ever happened to healthcare.
What woke me up to the whole dental thing, and it would have been early in the 2000s, maybe 2001 or two, was getting my hand on Charlotte Gerson's book. And the thing she said about dentistry blew my mind because they go into the whole root canal thing, everything, some of the things we're going to talk about, but let's get into mercury. I mean, how in the hell do we ever get to a place where a known toxin, a serious toxin, is put into people's teeth? It's unbelievable. So let's kick off with the history of mercury.
All right. So mercury basically was put into place because people couldn't afford to have gold fillings put in their teeth. So back in the day, there was barbershop dentists. Everybody's heard about the barbershop dentists, but they were the people that would just basically take teeth out because they couldn't afford fillings. And in 1859, the ADA was formed because there was two groups of people. There was the American Association of Dental Surgeons that were the original kind of ADA people, and then the barber group. And the barber group of people wanted to start using this mercury filling. And the people that had gone to dental school were like, that's insanity. You can't do that. We all know that mercury in hat making is extremely toxic. Everybody's heard the term mad as a hatter. But basically, it was a fight that went on, and the barbershop people, they won, and then they formed the ADA, and mercury has been in ever since. And they actually had a patent on mercury, the ADA, for over 100 years. And they've also had gag orders on dentists that they're not allowed to talk about the dangers of mercury.
You know what's unbelievable is to this day, and I had it done, you go in to get the mercury removed from your fillings, which I had put in my mouth in the late 70s. And they treat it like it is a biohazard. Mm-hmm. They put these dams in your mouth. They've got things covering up their breath. I mean, they're literally acting like they're removing a serious toxin from your mouth. And yet, to this day, you can go into damn near any dentist and that amalgam or whatever it's called is still being, if you don't specify, I'm guessing the majority of people are still going to get filled with mercury. Do you think that's correct?
There's definitely a lot of people still using it. It's not as common, which everybody's like, oh, people don't use them as much anymore. But it's still 50% of dentists still place amalgam fillings. And it's not just the older dentists. There's still younger dentists coming out. It's an easier technique. It does last longer than a composite filling, but it's definitely still used. And like you said, with the fluoride, it's something that's now in our environment forever. Millions of people are walking around with these fillings in their mouth that when they die and they get cremated, that goes into the air. And when you take it out of your teeth, like you were just saying, the dental professionals, the amount of toxic fumes that we're exposed to in a dental practice, if OSHA actually brought in a mercury vapor sniffer into the dental practice, they would be closed down. You wouldn't even be allowed to be open. And dentistry is the only profession that uses mercury that doesn't have OSHA monitoring it for mercury vapors.
Oh, is that right? Because they know, huh?
They know. It's the health impacts on dental people is documented, and it's out of control. You hear that dentists have like the second highest suicide rate. People think their job is very hard because the patients come in and they say, oh, I don't like the dentist. It's because they're mercury poisoned. The side effect is depression and tremors. And all these older dentists, they all have tremors. They all have shaky hands. And it's really sad because nobody knows about it. You're lucky that you found a dentist that does the PROTECT protocol when they take your fillings out, but it's very rare to find that. And if you do find it, it costs an arm and a leg. Some places will charge $250 per tooth just to take that mercury filling out.
Well, what happened to me is I had it done. And then that tooth, when I got done, the dentist said, I'm a little concerned about how thin I left the wall. Yeah. And I thought, what? You know, talk about no informed consent. First of all, you're not being told back in the day that these bad things are being put into you, even if they consider them bad. Secondarily, they're taking it out. And then it's like, I don't know if I left you enough tooth there. Sure enough, when I got to Rhode Island, the tooth broke.
Yeah.
So then I went in and they said, oh, we got to give you a root canal. I said, I'm not having a root canal. Well, you've got to have a root canal. And I said, no, I don't have to have a root canal. And you might want to read Charlotte Gerson's book, Who Got the President of the Root Canal Society, to tell you what's actually going on there. Well, then you've got to get, you know, everything they laid out, I wasn't doing. And so basically in the back of my mouth, I have a hole where there was once a tooth because mercury was put in it and they destroyed the tooth to get the mercury out, basically.
Yeah, and mercury fillings, they usually have to have a large prepped area because they don't bond to the tooth. So they have to take a bigger area out than the cavity was originally just to get the thing to hold. So that happens a lot when you take the mercury fillings out because they're just so much filling material to begin with. There's a big cover-up story behind mercury fillings in the FDA. And if you go on toxicteeth.org, Charlie Brown and the Consumers for Dental Choice, it's documented for years the work they've been doing. And they've been making some really big strides, including the Minamata Convention has been something that the United States signed, which is supposed to be phasing out mercury worldwide. The FDA came out with a stance in September of 2020 saying a long list of people that mercury shouldn't be used in, including pregnant women or women that may become pregnant. So anybody, woman of childbearing age and children under the age of 15, but hardly any dentists even know that those things are out there. When I talk to my consulting clients, they don't even know that these articles happened and that they're supposed to be following these guidelines. And there's so a lot of children are still getting mercury fillings. A lot of women are still getting mercury fillings because they just simply don't know that these things are out there.
Who's manufacturing this stuff and pushing it still? I'm assuming for a very large profit.
So Shine was one of the big ones, obviously. And if when you look into that whole cover-up story, you'll see Shine. Henry Shine is a big player. They had somebody go onto the board at the FDA when the mercury thing started to happen. But most of the companies have actually, I think like three companies pulled out in the past 2 years. And there's only one or two manufacturers left because they know it's going to be done. The European Union is phasing it out completely in 2025. So we're very behind the times in the United States with this.
Well, we've got guns here. They've got to remove the population. That's why our food, you know, it's a big reason why we get the butt end of almost every joke there is with food or anything else. But not to pull us off target here, but how do you feel about xylitol and xylitol gums? I love gums, but for years now, there's really no options unless you dig and dig because they've got gum has horrible stuff in it. I found some xylitol. And I think I was actually talking to Fortune. He said, I think that's supposed to be good for your teeth. And that's why I want to ask you, what do you know about xylitol?
So they're doing a lot of research on xylitol. We've always been taught that xylitol is good for teeth because it's an antimicrobial. So it kills all the bacteria in your mouth.
What is xylitol? I've heard of it, but I don't actually know what it is.
I think it's like it's a bark. I think it's from a bark of some tree. It's like a extract.
Sweetener replaces sugar.
But it's a naturally sourced sweetener, technically, but it's also very antimicrobial. When you're talking about homeostasis and trying to balance your microbiome, when you use something that kills bacteria every day, that can end up eventually working against you and depleting nitric oxide and things like that is the concern that they have, which is why they think it might affect cardiovascular disease is the nitric oxide component.
What is the chemical? I've forgotten. I think Donald Rumsfeld had a hand in getting the toxic sweetener that's in all the gums. What's it called, Jason? Do you remember?
Aspartame.
Aspartame.
Yeah, aspartame.
Yeah, that one's terrible. They put that in everything.
And before that, it was saccharin.
Saccharin, yeah, all of those.
Yeah, unbelievable. But let's push forward here. I want to get into the Minamata Convention. Can you tell us what that is and lead us down the road?
Yeah, so the Minamata Convention on Mercury is a global treaty to protect human health and environment from the adverse effects of mercury. It basically was adopted in 2013 and enforced in 2017. And in June of 2022, the United States and 144 other nations all agreed that they need to start removing mercury, especially in the most vulnerable populations with dental amalgam, with children and pregnant and breastfeeding women, because they are very aware of the neurotoxic effects of mercury. In the United States, they met, I think, in October of 2023, and the United States was rated poorly as to complying with this.
Well, we should get used to that because we're getting to be on the bottom of every list. Is there an attachment to the UN with this?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that.
Let's see here. It does seem to have some crossover to the UN, but I don't see a direct line. But how many nations did you say? 140 some?
144.
was it basically they ranked them? Did they put directives forth?
I believe so, yes.
So it comes down to places like the ADA to whether or not this is going to have any effect, right?
Right. And they are still holding that dental amalgam is a safe material and that they shouldn't be removed unless there's a problem with it.
You've got to wonder how much of the onset of Parkinson's is the result of my mother's and father's generation being really the first that was just packed full of mercury.
Yeah, all of it. Tremors, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, kidney damage, asthma, skin problems, tinnitus, reproductive problems. It crosses the mother to the baby. So children of mothers with mercury fillings in their mouth tend to have a lot of mercury load when they're born. And then you know what happens when they're born and they get more mercury. Men can't excrete mercury as easily as women either. So they build it up more. And autism is diagnosed 4 times more often in boys than in girls. So there's definitely a lot of research. And Dr. Boyd Haley has done a lot of research on that. And it's very compelling information.
What was the FDA statement? You have here in your bullets a statement out of the FDA. What is it? September 20, 2020. So right at the first half a year of COVID.
Yep. So they snuck it out there. And basically they said certain groups may be at greater risk for potential harmful effects of mercury vapor released from the device. So they recommended pregnant women and their developing fetuses, women who are planning to become pregnant, nursing women, newborns, infants younger than 6 years old, people with neurological diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, impaired kidney function. Yeah, if you have an allergy to mercury, which is the entire human population.
It's the boilerplate response.
Exactly.
And so is that the same stance on mercury from the EPA, FDA, CDC? Who are they all in that boilerplate response?
Well, believe it or not, if you go on the FDA and EPA websites, hands down, they know that this stuff is bad stuff. And they tell you that it's highest exposure when you grind your teeth, when you eat, when you drink, when you remove the filling, when you place the filling. They are very strongly against mercury on their websites, which is just the craziest thing.
Of all the medical professions, and this has really gotten to me since we had COVID, is the lack of informed consent in medical industry in general is unbelievable. If you don't open your mouth and take charge, you're going to get things done to you that's just going to happen. So my big question here, how do you feel a person walking in that doesn't want fluoride and mercury in an average dentist in America? Do you think the average person can just walk in and say, I don't want these things and they'll be accommodated? Or do you think we haven't quite got there yet?
I think that mercury is for the most part a pretty easy one because the dentist makes more money on a white filling. So they don't really complain too much about that. And most dentists are happy to place a white filling over a silver filling. They're very rarely like, oh, I have to use a mercury filling. That's the other problem. When I talk to my patients and I say, oh, you know, your mercury fillings are leaking in your mouth, they're like, what do you mean, mercury? They don't have any idea that silver filling is 50% elemental mercury. They don't have any clue. And as soon as you say those words to them, they're like, get this out of my mouth. Why is this in my mouth? As far as the fluoride, can you come into an office and not ask for fluoride? I think you're still going to get a decent amount of pushback. I think people are also a little more sensitive now with this fluoride trial ruling, people that know about it. So they're kind of doubling down on it. And again, if fluoride is another one of those highly profitable things in the dental office, you buy a swab of fluoride for 50 cents and you charge out $40 for it. And it takes 20 seconds to apply. So it's one of those things that, especially now after COVID, where costs are so high and salaries are so high, the dentists are really trying to get more from their clinicians. And that's one of the easiest ways to cover costs.
As far as information being disseminated out, how would dentists get the memo?
It'd be the ADA, wouldn't it?
Well, the ADA is what people look for as like their go-to. But they're just a governing body. They're a lobbyist. That's all they are. They're a lobbying party. They're not like the FDA. They're a pay-to-play system, so they really don't have any true authority. But that's where people look to in the dental profession for their information.
You know, it comes down to whether you're serious about this. Even in San Diego, after I had the 20-30 minute fight to not get the fluoride that the person I was dealing with was telling me I needed, when they finally acquiesced, did it without fluoride, that she said, well, I don't know. She made a big deal out of the cleaning powder because now I have to redo everything or something, she said, because what I was getting ready to do, the fluoride's in there. I said, well, you're not doing that. But here's the thing. I got the cleaning done. What she used had no fluoride. And then she handed me a minty cup at the end and said, rinse out your mouth. And I said, what's in it? And it was fluoride. She had handed me another cup of fluoride. So basically, it is on you. And as far as I can tell, the only way is to state your intention that you don't want these things. And then every single thing that is done, say, please tell me what's in that. There's really no, I mean, there's no other way to proceed at this point, is there?
No, I mean, and even a lot of like the cements and liners that are used along with fillings have fluoride components that release over time. So even just not having it polished onto your teeth, it doesn't end there. It's in a lot of other products as well.
You know what? I get those little things where you can clean in between your teeth. They're like nylon toothpicks with little veins on them.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I went in and I'm looking for them. And I read on the ones that I don't get, luckily, in small print on the back, these little, I guess those are plastic, have fluoride added to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you really have to be vigilant.
Yeah.
So how does insurance play into what we're talking about with mercury? You have insurance downgrades listed here.
So it's after the FDA stance and all these things came out with the Minamata Convention, and even the World Health Organization says mercury is a major public health concern. It's top 10 chemicals of public health concern. And these insurance companies many times refuse to cover anything but a mercury filling. So they downgrade, like if you do a white filling, you know, a resin-based filling on a patient, the insurance will say, well, that's nice that you did that, but the patient can pay for that because we don't pay for that. So they will only pay what they pay for a mercury filling, and the patient then has to pay the difference, which can be, depending on how the office operates, anywhere from $5 to $250 extra cost per tooth just to have a filling placed. And I don't know, I've tried to talk to Delta Dental a couple times via email and in person at a lecture about this. How is it that they can downgrade on these patients that aren't allowed to have them? I said, do I need to send a narrative in and say, this is a woman that might have a child, so she's not allowed to have these mercury fillings? They said nothing about it. They were just, oh, it's the employer that gets to choose what plan they want their employees to have. I said, do you bring them the information about the dangers of mercury fillings and the FDA stance? And they're like, no, we don't do that. It's like, it's crazy. All they have to do is say, we'll cover composite fillings, and everybody would get composite fillings. They set the fee. They set the price. It's not like they can't just control it and say, hey, this is what you get paid for a composite filling. They just won't do it. It's crazy.
It's hard to imagine that someone hasn't taken them to court over this. But as I say those words, we both know what happens these days. Every time some touchy subject like this goes to court, there's a non-disclosure agreement. And I want to say for the record, if I was going through something that I was serious about and wanted to make the point, I would never sign an NDA. But for those people, and I know it's the majority of people who are going to take the money, if you refuse to take the NDA and say something like, I was getting ready to settle, but I won't do the NDA, almost always a higher offer comes as a way to get a bigger paycheck if you're not caring about the message. But as Jason and I go along, I would say 3/4 of the people who end up going to court and succeeding sign NDAs these days. So the information never gets out.
Right.
Unbelievable.
And the other thing about these mercury fillings is that they have reactions to other materials in your mouth. So if you have a dental implant or you have braces in your mouth with other metals, they react with each other, or a crown with metal in it, and it causes a galvanic reaction and you start to have corrosion going on in your mouth. And also fluoride corrodes these metals, which is just even more crazy. So it's just like it never ends when you start to learn about this stuff.
Man, you're almost better walking around with no teeth.
Believe me, there's some days where I'm telling patients to do that.
I had to make the choice. I have one. Luckily, it's in the back of my mouth, but I had to make that choice. All the options that I got, I read about in the Gerson manual, and I'm not having any of it. By the way, I am convinced that my mother's dementia, much of it could be attributable to the dental work. She had multiple root canals, bridges, and mercury.
Yeah, it's a very heavy toxic load.
Very heavy.
And I feel so bad when I see these patients that come in with this stuff. They tell you that the filling is stable, basically, is what they say when it's mixed with the other alloys, the mercury with the other alloys, that it's stable. But as a clinician, all you have to do is open somebody's mouth to know that's not true, because next door to a mercury filling in their tissue, in their gingiva, has turned black from the release of the vapors into the tissue.
What caused the initial decision to use mercury in the first place? Of all things, why mercury?
I think because it's so palatable, it makes it easy to pack into malleable. It's very easy to work into a hole, and it sets quickly.
And there was a lot of it around back then because it was being used to process gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really big problem with mercury as well.
What happens with gold, with, because so many people have gold in their mouths with mercury fillings? How do those, I know, isn't mercury used to separate the gold out?
Yeah, for the mining. Yep.
Yeah.
It does. It will corrode it. They'll start to look like tarnished. But most gold restorations in the mouth aren't pure gold. Even if you request a gold crown from your dentist, it's usually still an alloy with other metals. Otherwise, the lab bill on a gold crown would be like $800. So if you're not paying an extra $800 for a gold crown, you're probably not getting a real gold crown.
Well, gold is also very soft. I don't think you could use pure gold, could you?
They used to use gold leaf fillings, and pure gold, they would tap it into the teeth. That's what they used before mercury. And I've seen patients in their 90s, being that I've been in this profession for a long time, that have existing gold leaf fillings that are perfectly beautiful condition. But yes, it is much softer. So it all depends on the tooth that you're using it on and the patient's habits, how long that would last.
Well, let's talk about the materials so people are well informed. So many things in your list. I see listed partials, dentures, braces, crowns, retainers, cements. Let's jump into the materials because, again, if you don't inform yourself, then you have no way to ensure that when you go in to get things done, well, for lack of a better term, you're not being poisoned.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if people really looked at the MSDS sheets on all the materials that are used in dental procedures, nobody would ever have dental work done again. That's the problem. Just the partials and dentures, there's all different metals and chromium and cobalt, titanium, tin, zinc, beryllium, stainless steel, acrylic, nylon, BPA, and a lot of the white fillings have BPA. Titanium dioxide is put into a lot of the white fillings. We use plastic, glass. The materials that we use for root canals, literally bleach that you can buy at Stop and Shop for your laundry, formaldehyde, latex to fill the roots of the teeth. It's really, really, really scary. Even when you start to look at dental anesthetic, there's a lot of weird things coming out about dental anesthetic lately. There's graphene oxide in dental anesthetics to make the anesthetics last longer, which can make people very sick. A lot of sulfites. And recently there's been some interesting findings. People are trying to say there's nanobots in dental anesthetic. I don't know how true that is.
They say that about everything now. Nanobot. And the iron, well, I'm not even going to get into it. The irony is the ability to even detect a true nanobot is not like you can use a regular microscope. But in biological dentistry, I mean, how are you pulling off a healthy dentistry if all the materials or so many of the materials are made up of things that are not helpful? How do you get around that?
So that's the problem. So there's obviously some materials that are safer than others, like a direct porcelain rather than a composite filling is a better option. But a lot of the biological dentists, they'll do biocompatibility testing for all the materials that they use, or they'll do muscle testing and different things like that to make sure your body reacts the least amount to a material before they use it on you.
And so what does that do to cost? What does that do to insurance? Could the average person work a week, pay your bills, work a week, pay your bills? Could they afford to go to a biological dentist as they could a normal dentist? Or is there going to be a cost disparity to get away from the toxins?
It's a huge financial burden. Even just to get one biocomp test on a root canal tooth is like $400 just to find out what bacteria are living in that tooth.
Not insurance covered, I'm guessing.
Never. Mm-mm. And that's the problem that I have. I think biological dentistry should be the standard of care. And until it is, it's going to be only available to wealthy people or people that put money aside to be able to afford it. I mean, going for a cleaning at a biological office, if that's all you have to do a couple times a year, is affordable. But when you have to have mercury removed and root canals removed and biocompatibility testing, we do a lot of blood work at biological offices. It gets very, very, very expensive very quickly.
What is making it so expensive? Is it because all those tests and everything have to be outsourced and that's just what they charge?
Exactly. That's a lot of it. Yep. And it's a lot more time. Taking out a mercury filling with a PROTECT protocol, it takes a lot more time in the materials used. You have to have mercury cream, you have to have oxygen tanks, all disposable gowns for yourself, your assistant, your patient. The overhead just to take those fillings out safely is very, very expensive. And the dentist getting paid $87 for that filling can't afford to accept insurance to do those things. So that's why most biological dentists don't accept insurance. It's a fee for service.
Well, the insurance agencies pretty much run whatever they're insuring. They run the auto industry. They run, I'm assuming, the dental industry, right? They insure a thing or they don't. They set the standards. They set the practices. But more than anything, they set what can be done and what cannot be done.
Right. Right. You have to ask permission before you do any major dental work on a patient. And somebody at the insurance company looks at the x-ray and says, yay or nay.
We used to make fun a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, a doctor is considered to be practicing. And I used to bounce this off the old literature you can read on Chinese doctors, where if they didn't heal you, they didn't get paid. But since COVID, the practice joke doesn't even work. It's administration directing. The doctors are basically puppets at this point, many of them. They have no free will at this point. They are directed by insurance. They are directed by administration. If they don't like the game, they can use the door.
Yeah, it's crazy. When you do like a hair test mineral analysis, you can find a lot of people's dental materials in their hair, and it'll say right on there, likely from a dental material. So these things aren't stable. When you get a titanium implant, that's not stable in your jaw. It's releasing particles over time. Same thing with zirconia. It's a better material, but it doesn't mean that it's stable and you're still going to have exposure to it. So it's very important to find out what material your body will accept more readily than another material when you have to have something restored.
We're coming up on hour one, Samantha. Is there anything you'd like to mention? Do you want to let people know where they can find you, your work, a website? Would you like to give out anything like that?
Sure. I would say my website from what I do is Last Green Valley Dental Consulting and Mentoring. And what I do is try to get regular dentists and hygienists allopathically to be interested in these things and try to spread the word about biological dentistry. And then obviously the International Academy of Biological Dentistry of Medicine. Any way you follow us on social media, we're the founding members of this. We're the OGs. We really are out there trying to get people to pay attention to not just the fluoride and the mercury, but some of the other things we're going to talk about in hour two that are really true to the biological standpoint as far as energy and root canals and all these other things. And I think it's going to be the new standard of care, but I think the patients really need to force it on their practitioners. When you go for your cleanings, talk to your hygienist about it, talk to the assistant, talk to the dentist, and keep bringing it up. The more the practitioners think you're interested in it, the more they'll be open to changing what they do to accommodate it.
Are you a hub of any kind to help people find a biological dentist in their area?
The IABDM website has a directory source right on their website.
We'll have to get that information. Rose, if you're listening, let's grab a web address for that. Anyhow, Samantha, I'm going to wrap up hour one. Anything you want to get in, Jason?
When we come back for hour two, can you discuss what actually are safe substances used for implants? Because there seems to be so many crazy things that I don't know if people even know what to ask for.
Right. Yeah, we can talk about that for sure.
I'll make a note about implants. We'll open up with it, but that is the first hour. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. Members get access to all the forums, all the threads, all the comments, and they can create those things. They can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, covering all my prior telescope work, anytime they like. That now has 10 awards out in the world, out on the independent film circuit, as well as all members get exclusive access to my current solar work and the search for the second sun, which was just spotted again in California yesterday. I am still patiently waiting for my shot. By the way, I think I have now 19 or 20 solar images posted that can be purchased, downloaded, and printed. With that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I hope to see you logged in as a member, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
is the enemy of knowing.